Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi there, you're listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, and my guest this week is Hal Cruttendon. It's a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it. There are 6 more to come in the series, including this one. So those will go out over the next few weeks, and after that there'll be a little lull in the audio ones until we return in June. If you like these podcasts and want to help support us, one great way of doing that is to come and see us live. It's lots of fun. You get to see and hear all the bits that get cut out because they're too contentious. There's not a lot of bits, but there's some quite good bits that people who are at home have missed out on, and I think there's just a better atmosphere. You get to meet the other nerds in the army of nerds that I have. It's quite a fun social occasion, and it'll be back on Monday nights in 2016, which is its correct time slot, meaning we can go on for as long as we want. Do 2 a night. That's a secret, though. Don't tell anyone. And they can last ending up to 3 hours. So if you're out of town, it's a little bit tricky to come along, but it's a Monday night, Leicester Square Theatre. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com, and you can already purchase tickets. So we've already sold about 50 for the first show on June the 6th. So that gives you an idea that it might be worth getting in there early. Some big guest names hopefully coming up in the next series might include Dawn French, Vic Reeves, Grayson Perry, who had to get bumped by his own volition last time, will hopefully be coming back, and lots of other quite exciting possible names in the frame. So it's worth booking ahead, because when they announce names like that, they do sell out straight away, so you can beat the rush by taking a punt and guessing which one they will be on at. But as I say, I hope they're all fun, even the names you may not have necessarily heard of before. And anyway, let us crack straight on. LeicesterSquareTheatre.com if you want to buy tickets to that. Or indeed to Happy Now, which will be on Leicester Square Theatre in the second week of February. Let's crack on. Here it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. He didn't want you to look at him, but now he wants you to look at him. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! Thank you. Hello. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. My name's Richard Herring. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Or someone's down at the Apple store. Oh, the cool kids hang out now. And a lot of them were calling it Rehelestapa. That's interesting. There's a lot of cool kids in. So let's have a look what's been going on this week in the news. Jed Bush. This is the week that Jed Bush said that if he could travel back through time, he would kill baby Hitler. Jeb Bush's name, isn't it? But it's that's foolish of him. And he accepted that would have knock-on effects, but he still thought it was worth doing. By doing that, Jeb Bush has just consigned all of us to not never exist. So that is, we should not be, because if Hitler dies, then the whole of history changes. None of, I think a lot of you think that if you would be here, whatever happened in history, that is not the case. If you change one thing in history, everything changes, different people meet each other, especially if you kill Hitler. He changed a lot of things. There'll be a lot of people alive who weren't alive. So he's an idiot, is basically what I'm saying. I was watching that, have you seen the Jack Black and George Clooney Nespresso advert in which Jack Black's drinking, he realises that drinking Nespresso, he gets a tip from George Clooney that drinking Nespresso is a great way to meet girls. And then at the end he drinks one and a girl comes up to him and then he looks at George Clooney and George Clooney goes and pulls a really disgusting old man face. But it's like, yeah, that's right, we trapped another woman, we got another one, well done, Jack. It's not all about chatting to him. It's trapping them. I think they're saying that Nespresso is Rehypnol. I think that's what they're saying. And if it isn't, let Nestle sue me, if that is not what they're saying. And I've enjoyed my walk up to the Leicester Square. And what I've noticed recently is, you know, there's a lot of terrible things happening in the world, obviously, and with a lot of fear going on. And I've noticed in the last couple of weeks, the police in Britain have got a way to combat everything that's going, the awful. In Leicester Square, they've started putting policemen on steps, so they can see slightly further than they would have. They're on. If you go out there, there's on a step, and they can look around. I feel a lot safer now walking around Leicester Square Theatre, and I understand why Eminem. I'm getting very cross about Eminem World. I don't understand why that's there. Well, M&M's aren't a British thing. They shouldn't be in Leicester Square. They're not even popular in England and Britain, I don't think. They've hardly ever been. If it was Smarty World, I'd be happy with that. That's what we have. Yeah, it's always full of people buying. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're not that nice. How can there be a whole shop just for M&M's? You can't start doing that. And it's always full, but it's always full of tourists who go, oh, we like M&M's, so there's a shop about it. No, okay, just me. It makes me very angry. Anyway, I am going to introduce, hopefully, our first guest. He was on the loo, but hopefully he's off the loo by now. He's probably best known. He's run out for a lot of things. He was, of course, a schoolboy in A Married Man, the 1990s. When he was a schoolboy, I'm guessing. He was young Hugh in Mrs. Dalloway, a proper film. And, of course, he was the bearded applicant in Shackleton. Will you please welcome Hal Crandon, ladies and gentlemen? It's Hal Crandon. Here he is. Coming in. Welcome. Sit down.
Lovely.
That's very nice.
So, I'm actually secretly quite proud of some of those credits.
You should be. They're good.
Do you know who I was in the scene with in A Married Man?
I don't.
Anthony Hopkins.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Was he wanking?
I'm not impressed at all. I was 13 years old. Yeah. It was hilarious. I mean, honestly, I really want to be able to sort of... I wish I could show you the video because you would piss yourself. Can you imagine this voice, unbroken? It's like, I'm here. Hello, sir. I can't show you where to go. It's like that. And he's going... And I'd just seen him in The Elephant Man. Yeah. And I was slightly thrown. And I had to do 12 takes for the first thing I ever did on TV. Because I was so bad. I was so like, oh, I kept hopping from foot to foot.
I bet he gets that a lot, Anthony Hopkins. I bet people are just going, ooh, that's you.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've got to act now. Ooh, it's exciting. You're in Silence of the Lambs.
I know.
No, you did have this, you had quite a long career as an actor before, and you went to drama school?
Well, I retired at 13.
Right.
Because I hated being a young actor. My sister was a very successful young actor. Is it wrong to say actress? I'm really not sure of this now.
It is now, but yeah.
Okay. I really did. It's one of those things that makes me feel really old, because it was okay 25 years ago. We'd go, oh, actress, you know, but now you feel like an old buffer saying it. But she was like a young actor. She got a very big agent when she was 14. She did a film called, anyone remember this? Patanyang Kipperbang.
Yeah, do.
And she was Anne Lawton, who was the girl who the boy fancied in that. It was the second day of Channel 4.
It was, I remember.
The kids are going, Channel 4. Channel 4 once didn't exist. And it was the second day in 1982, and she was 14 years old. She was the girl that he was in love with. And And she got a massive A. And I was just had the most amazing time at school because I just started a new school and all these boys would go, "That's your sister," and they'd try and get me to go home and get her to sign stuff and give me their number and stuff. And I was willing to prostitute my sister for any sort of attention I could get. But I hated it. I hated it. It's horrible being a child actor. It's a horrible. It's easy to get jobs, but people, you know that everybody hates you, that you're a twat. You know.
Well, also, a lot of child actors go off the rails, but I think because, especially once they become massively successful, really famous, I think it becomes very hard to cope with the change. And I think if you're young and you get used to that, I think that's my theory. But I mean, it's a bit of an obvious theory, but you did go to, you went to drama school.
Then I went to university and realised, oh God, I really do want to be an actor again. So I went back to drama school at like 22 and did 3 years and then left and struggled with odd little parts. So, yeah, it wasn't very successful, my acting, and I'm brilliant. That's how tough it is. I think I'm really good, but quite hard to cast.
What about when you were the bearded applicant in Shackleton? That must
well, have yeah, bearded applicant. Do you remember, I actually can't watch the whole thing because I'm too jealous if I've not made it to a bigger part in a film. So I've watched up to my bit in Shackleton. Or I have one scene, and it was I'd auditioned for the role of somebody that was going on the trip with Shackleton, the artist, or something. I can't remember the name of the character even, and I failed to get the part, but they said, "We want you to play this part of bearded applicant." It's a really funny, but it's a really sort of, well, he's got a big beard and stuff, and weirdly I was with Kenneth Branagh was obviously playing Shackleton in the scene, and I'd been in the West End with him when I was 12 in Another Country, the play.
Oh yes.
And he hadn't seen me in all that time. He went, "Hell, don't we knew each other quite well."
Right.
And I went, "Yes, I'm the little twatty kid, and now how old am I?" But again, and I said, at the time, I was a stand-up. I'd started being a stand-up, and I went, "I'm actually a stand-up now, so that's why I've only got a small part, because I'm very, very busy." And so him saying, he actually said to me, "Oh, stand-up, that's a brown pants job, love." And I thought, this is like being Maggie Smith or something, telling anecdotes of actors.
So but you failed the audition for the part you wanted to get, and then you got the part of someone who failed to get on the thing.
So you were
very good at failing to get in there.
Failure was my thing.
He can't do that part, but he's very good at not getting on stuff.
But I think
we must have him.
But don't you think that is what stand-up is all about, being a bit of a failure? I think
up to an extent. I mean, acting's hard. I mean, I've done a couple of auditions recently, and it's just, I feel, and I've been auditions on the other side when I've auditioned people to be in things, and you know, it's sort of, there's so much luck in it, and there's so many parts you go, "Oh, it could be either of them." We don't, you know, so it just goes down to almost tossing a coin, but it's ridiculous. But it's so, you know, nowadays you go into a room, sometimes it's just they film you and it's just someone operating a camera. They don't even give you any direction. And so you try and act into a camera. I had to be a dwarf who was an actual, they had this thing about dwarfs and giants, but they were all actually average height, but they'd just got into two factions of dwarfs and giants. So I had to play an average-sized dwarf, and then I also auditioned for an average-sized giant. It was quite nice to, you know, those are roles. I mean, I might get into a dwarf. I could be in The Hobbit if I'd, you know.
You would have been good in The Hobbit.
I mean, you're
not tiny, but you've got a stocky little...
Thank you.
Stocky doesn't mean fat, but kind of...
No, I know. Yeah. I mean, I think you have to be 5'7" or under, which I... might be. might just about be. But we were just briefly touched on this backstage, but you know, I think now people know you, you're on TV, you've done Live at the Apollo and, you know, lots of telly stuff, and you get this feeling that you're an overnight success, but again, you've been doing stand-up for that since the 90s or just the early 2000s?
Late 90s, yeah. I first did stand-up. Yes, it's taken me ages, and I'm not, you know, I've got... it's all degrees. I've never had that moment in my career where I've gone, "Tonight has been the most amazing night of my life." I must admit, first time I did Live at the Apollo, it's such a frightening gig to do because that bloody great screen comes up and you walk through smoke to walk out, and it's really frightening. And it went brilliantly. And that is the one time I did. I went home and went to bed and I couldn't sleep. I was lying in bed going, "I'm amazing. I'm going to be such a huge star." But actually, nothing ever goes like that. People used to do Royal Variety and be an overnight success.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. you do Royal Variety. I've done Royal Variety a couple of times, and it's good, it's nice, it's another little stepping stone. But the whole thing is us pretending that we're sort of, it's like a duck thing, isn't it? That we're serenely on the pond going, it's wonderful being this career, it's so easy. And actually, we're all paddling furiously to keep getting attention, keep getting on stuff, keep, you know, selling tickets or whatever.
It's very difficult. You won the best newcomer in 2002. So that kind of gives you an idea of how long that has taken.
And I've been going about 4 years then as well.
Well, anyway, the newcomer, as I've discussed, is a kind of weird category, because like you can be been going for 15 years and then in a double act or a triple act, and then suddenly you're a newcomer. And it's
that's where Mickey Flanagan played it so well, like that. Mickey Flanagan for ages was on the circuit. Took ages to go to Edinburgh. Did his first Edinburgh show. He was much more experienced than... He'd been going about 11 years. Went up there and was just fantastic. And then, you know, and then just kept doing... Did Edinburgh very, very sort of intense period and then took off. And he's now, you know... But for years, people went, that guy's brilliant. Why is he not, you know, doing big shows?
So. Yeah, it's, so you're touring at the moment with... It's Straight Out of Cruttendon. Is that your current tour?
Straight Out of Cruttendon. I think my titles are hilarious. And people say, they go, yeah, it's a bit silly. I've got a DVD out of my last tour that's coming out, and that was called Tough Lovey, which I think is brilliant. I think that deserves so much more. Tough Lovey is brilliant, but Straight Out of Crutton, it's tough. It's the same, it's a similar theme. The theme is sort of that I'm a bit of a softie, but I'm always trying to be hard.
Yeah.
And Tough Lovey was a bit like that. And Straight Out of Cruttendon, it's sort of also about the fact that I've started listening to gangster rap in my mid-40s again. I don't know if anyone, has anybody had that of going back? You know, when I was 1920, I listened to NWA and Public Enemy, and I downloaded them earlier this year and just listened to them in the car and go, fucking yes. Pigs.
It's called a midlife crisis.
They don't really say pigs, do they? But I do. I don't hate the police, but I do. That song, Fuck the Police, used to be... Were you at college then? We used to play at the end of an evening. People put Fuck the Police on. We'd all go, we're all so angry and middle-class young kids. Yes!
I was sort of in between that punk and that. I was sort of in a no-man's land in between, I guess, a bit earlier. All I remember is the House Martins being very big.
Yes.
So that wasn't quite the same.
No.
But I've never been that much into music. I know it's interesting because I think it's fine. Having read about you, it's finding that kind of your persona on stage, and you're sort of talking about it'd be nice to be a political comedian, but you don't want to do the reading. I think I'd said it's a lot of effort.
Yes, it is. Well, I did do politics at university, but I now that's only made me aware how little I know about everything, and that I'm very stop and start with. You know, I think loads of us are. God, you just have to look at Facebook and Twitter to see the utter bollocks that friends talk about politics. I mean, we are... I'm so scared about the EU referendum because I don't know what's right and wrong. I mean, we are... I know this is really anti-democratic, but that's the disaster of democracy, that most of us are thick as pig shit and really badly informed about politics, and we are making these decisions. Well, we must trust the people, but we know fuck all! You know, it's really dodgy. So I am lazy about politics and stuff. I think my stand-up now is a sort of amalgam of what I am. I think most stand-ups want to reach a point where you are being as true to the person you are off stage as you are on stage.
Yeah.
And I think when I started for a long time, I was very, hello, I'm just going to please you, and aren't I cute? I've got a funny face. Am I gay? No, I'm not. You know, stupid. I watched myself walk out on the Royal Variety 2009 or McIntyre's Roadshow, and I go, you fucking twat. I can't bear that kind of, ooh. And so I think... No, but I still have that. You know, I still...
Hold on, was that you or Michael?
No. I was just discussing this on Gabby Ross's thing. I love Michael. I'm a big defender of any... people who slag off certain comedians, it really annoys me because I think most people are fantastic at what they do.
Yeah.
And you just have to concentrate on what you're doing and not go, oh, I don't like him or I like him or I like that style, or, you know. I do have that thing of one... I don't know. But I get compared a lot to Michael McIntyre, but I don't mind that. No. But I do think I'm very different to him because I'm like him, but I'm very unhappy that I'm that... Yeah, I think he genuinely is a fun... upbeat guy, and he's brilliant at observational comedy. I tend to go on and have a lot of issues. I'm like him with problems, I think.
Well, I suppose what's quite interesting is that there's a lot of middle class comedians, and a lot of them are pretending not to be middle class, or choosing to weigh it in a different way. Whereas you've sort of embraced who you are, and you've embraced your middle classness in that way, would you say?
Yeah, but I think it really annoys me when people hide from it.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are hiding. You know, when we think about what middle-class Britain is, I don't know how you define middle-class, but something like 60% of Britain is middle-class. About 20% of Britain thinks they're middle-class.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the working-class identity. I fucking love it as well. It'd be brilliant to be... You know, I'd love to go, I've actually, suffered and stuff. No, I've had a very cosy, lovely life. But loads of people have had that, and I can't bear them pretending they haven't. So I think it's better to go on stage and discuss how much you hate yourself for being that cosy, middle-class, know-nothing, haven't not lived in the real world, little bastard.
Yeah.
I think so much self-hatred. It's it's bad for me. I'm still too early for me.
It is. But, I mean, I think that's what... I'm a middle-class person, and I feel like it... There's some people saying, we can't judge people, and everyone's got to be treated equally, but then they're very happy to judge... You know, in an opposite, if it's not, if you're saying everyone's equal and everyone has to have the same respect, but they don't give that respect to a certain group of people in turn, I'm not saying that very well. Do you know what I mean? No.
Who do they give the respect to?
Well, it's just like going, you mustn't judge someone from where they come from, and everyone must be treated fairly. But then they wouldn't let you do that about working class people. Saying we're talking about class, but they're happy to go, but middle class people are all pricks, or people who went to public school are all pricks, or whatever. Whereas that isn't, if it's not your own choice, it makes me angry when it's not people who went to public school. It's not their choice.
No.
So it's not really fair to judge someone by that.
No, exactly. You shouldn't. And did you go to public school then?
I did.
Yeah, see, I did.
I hate all people who did.
No, I did. I did, but I'm thoroughly ashamed. And as one should be. I think it's a completely immoral system. But I think you should... But yes, you can't you can't judge people for that. But also, you should also be prepared to take a bit of stick for it.
That's right.
You should be prepared to have a bit of stick that you were... I have once was in a class size of 20. It was far too many. The fact you've had that slightly easier time. I wasn't very bright at school, and they got me to a decent university. That was money bought that. And that's wrong. And I'll live with that for the rest of my... No. I'm so bitter. I really am.
You were at school. Were you at school with George Osborne, or just the same school as?
I was at. I wasn't in the same year. I knew him.
Yeah.
He was a couple of years below me, but he used to turn up to the debating society, and he was the young little prick going, I think I've got him. Can you imagine him? He's exactly how you'd imagine. He was sort of tubby and little 13-year-old kind of Gideon Osborne. He was Gideon. I don't know when the George happened, because
they tried to rebrand him to make him more, but. To make him more electable to the public, I suppose.
Yeah.
But then he's still the same person, so it doesn't really matter. At least Gideon would give him an element of, that's interesting.
He's
got a quite an interesting name.
No, it's weird, isn't it? But I have vague memories of him. There were lots of... That's the other thing about some of those... Like, my school was very academic. St Paul's produces these people. Like a very good friend of mine is now... a very good friend. We fell out over a girl at 15. But we were good friends at school, and I should have stayed in contact with him. I think it was the morning I was moaning about not achieving stuff in life, and my wife brought me the paper in bed, and it plonked in front of me, and it said it was James Harding has been is the youngest ever editor of the Times,
right.
And he was my best friend when I was 14. I was like, and he's now head of BBC News or something. There's another Tory, Ed Vasey was a year above me.
There's
another Tory. They're all Tories, and I think it's because I didn't concentrate that I'm not a Tory, because they're obviously trying to turn you into Tory ministers, and I was just pissing about and came out kind of a lovely liberal lefty kind of,
But your break into stand-up came when you were working for the BBC doing traffic reports, is that right? How did that leap occur?
It was a guy called David Klein who... He lives near me, I think, West London. But he... I was working, writing, reading and writing traffic reports. You'd get on local radio and you'd be writing the stuff for 5 Live and Radio 4 and all, the A40 is really busy, and you'd mainly be writing, and I'd do the odd broadcast, you know. And people say to me, oh, did you put in little jokes in your travel broadcast? You go, no, because often people don't want that when they're in a 10-mile tailback. Oh, how hilarious. And, you know, let's do a joke about... Oh, look, you see, she's too angry. Because, you know, you can't make jokes about car accidents. People have died and stuff, so you can't, you know. But I used to do that, and a guy I was working with, we used to always be chatting in the office, and he said to me, you should do stand-up. And he was starting doing stand-up himself. He was doing a little stand-up comedy course, workshop thing, Jill Edwards course, who now does something in Brighton. And this used to be at the City Lit. And all these, and he said, you should do this. And it really... I do remember that thing of going, oh, that would be good, because I'd like to do one-man shows as an actor, because I was trying to be an actor, but working in BBC because I wasn't getting enough work. And I remember going down to sign on at the City Lit to do stand-up comedy, and I do remember that fateful thing of walking there going, this is it. This is going to be something, because I just... And all the people that encouraged me to do it and who were in that group who took me to my first gigs, and I was a neurotic, as I always have been, and I always go, oh, I don't want to do it, or be scared, or I'm going to get heckled. I'm the only one that kept going, because I did do it and go, this is it forever. At last, I found some way of making all my crap, weak things powerful.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about comedy. It's that thing of going, I can be a silly, camp, round-faced man, and that's a weapon in comedy. That's not a weakness anymore. Yeah. And I can be a, you know, so it was a sort of revelation moment.
Do you think you would go, I mean, if the right acting thing sort of comes along, will you go back into acting, or do you see yourself as a stand-up now who might do a bit of acting if that came?
I don't know, because I'm so obsessed with money that it depends what somebody offers. You know, if you've got a Hollywood movie, of course I'd do it. But no, if I could only do... I was thinking of it like this. I would like to still do bits of acting, and I do odds and ends. But if there was only one thing I could do, it would be stand-up. That's so much more fulfilling. But acting, the wonderful thing about acting is you are in a team, you are working with other people, because stand-up does... You know, if you're already a self-obsessed person, it makes it so much worse, doesn't it? Yeah. I don't know if you found that. I think you're so... Like the fact you can ask me a question and I can talk for 25 minutes. Yeah. You're so obsessed with yourself, and it just makes you worse. It makes... You know, that sort of... That thing of standing there with a microphone and talking to a whole crowd of people who are generally being quiet is how I'd like everybody to be socially. When I'm... You know... I'd love to go to a party and go, right, okay, you won't be talking anymore, it'll all be me. It suits me much more. But I love doing the odd bit of acting, It would be great. I'd love to write a sitcom and star in it.
Well, you've done a sitcom on Ready 4, right?
Yes.
Did you write that as well?
Yes, with Dominic Holland.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, well, no, I'm saying it was brilliant to do.
It was amazing.
It was okay still. I was the best thing in it. But... No, but it was. I mean, it was so wonderful. All these people coming in. People like Ronnie Ancona, who was brilliant in it. And Anna Crilly we got, and Dominic, and Ed Byrne was Fergus, the Irish friend. And just people that all came along and did it. And it was... there was something really special about working with people and having them say your lines and go, this is funny. Yeah. Oh, God, I'm working with other comics, liking your stuff. It was brilliant.
And so you mind your own family quite a lot. You do stuff like your wife a lot. And so is it kind of difficult to... I mean, everyone does that. And is it a fictionalised account of your family, or is it fairly true to life? And does it lead to problems?
Do you know, this is really bad. A mum at my kid's school was a bit off with my wife when she first met her. And the second time they met, she got chatting to my wife and she went... I'm so sorry, I was a bit off with you, because from your husband's stand-up, I thought you were going to be really frightening. But my wife is quite frightening as well, but only if you really know her well. She's lovely, but and I stereotype that Northern Irish accent, we discussed this with the kids, that they are much more frightened of her than they are of me, and all those things are true.
Yeah.
And she is quite... a tough disciplinarian and things with the kids, but I've turned her into a bit of a monster, so I'm trying to now be more honest about her.
She got angry with you in real life, and that's why you're trying to back off.
Yes.
Well, this is the only place you can say those things. Yes. You're safe. We can't get you from here.
She has said, I am a bit fed up. You are. Yeah. It's just constantly that I'm this kind of... and it's racism. We have Northern Irish people here.
We won't let them in, Hal.
No. But it is. I mean, I am using... I am using her Northern Irishness to just to make jokes about it. But it is funny. It's a funny, scary accent when it's being shouted at you. It really is.
So I think this is a new thing I want to ask that I haven't asked before. I was thinking the other day about the deluded things I thought of myself as a child, which is a lot of things, right? So, I mean, I'm going to start, and this isn't even what I'm getting to. I was kind of quite convinced I was going to be, like, a major, important historical figure. This isn't even it yet. So I used to save up all my... I used to file all my reports and stuff and everything because I thought there would be evidence for the museum and all that. This isn't it yet. I know, I thought... It was kind of either politics or, like, the new Jesus or, something... I worried that in the future they would be capable of time travel and people would come back from the future to study me as a child, and that if I was picking my nose or masturbating that they would see that.
Oh my God.
Did you ever anything as... That was the bit. I would be doing things thinking, oh, what if the space future tourists have come back and they see me masturbating? That will go in the history books now. What's the most deluded thing you thought of yourself as a child? Well, can you beat that?
I think, that is really deluded, but I think didn't all of us have the childhood thing of, like, the Truman Show?
Yeah.
Where we thought everybody was doing it for us, that our whole life was just everybody else was a performance and we... Yeah.
So maybe, you and that bloke.
Two of us believed this.
Well, or you thought that everyone else might be robots.
Yes.
I remember thinking that all women might be robots and that explained a lot.
Yeah.
But, you also think, I might be the only actual real person.
I just think when I was a kid, all my ambitions and things were... I did think I was special.
Yeah.
I did walk around going, I'm a little bit special. Because I was a middle-class upbringing. It's horrendous, that parents going, you can do that. Of course you can. You're marvellous. It does make you think I can do this. And it actually fucks you up later in life when you realise I'm a quite very limited human being. But I think there's... I don't know, I did have showbiz dreams. I did think I wanted to be a movie star or a film star and all those things. And I kept waiting to become manly. That was my... No, but I really did, because I was a very high-voiced little... And everybody used to laugh at me at school because my voice was really high and I was a little girl's voice. And then I thought, my voice will break and it'll be fine. And my voice broke and they went, you've still got quite a camp voice there. And I kept waiting for this moment. I really thought I was going to become a sort of... I think there was a film called something like Bronx Warriors in the video store. And there was a picture of a guy on the front with kind of flowing hair. I never saw the movie. I remember thinking, one day I'm going to look like that and I'm going to be that man and I'm going to just be a hard bastard. Yeah. And I think I'm so sad it didn't happen, because it was my little childhood dream that one day this little boy, I was going to transform into this masculine bloke. And I think that's my big... Yeah.
Let's do a Kickstarter for that. Bronx Warrior 2.
Honestly, I saw it. Pathetic. I think I had a dream that I became that man or something.
I wonder, though. I mean, I think it's sort of, obviously, like a lot of people who go on to be successful sort of have the idea that they're going to be successful and that's what drives them. And if you don't have the failures and if it doesn't go wrong and you do just get successful, then that delusion feels like it was... True.
Yeah.
So, like when Noel Edmonds says all you have to do to get what you want is to write it down on a piece of paper or whatever it says and it happens.
Yeah.
That works for Noel Edmonds because, by luck, that's what's happened to him. But so then you start to believe crazy things. So if I'd become very successful, I'd be inventing a time travel or I'd be trying to stop the invention of time travel now. That's what I'd be doing.
But as Noel Edmonds did, Noel must have had setbacks early in his career.
I think he had a few, yeah.
So he hasn't just been plain sailing.
Yeah,
but he was like,
he's very, it's hard to tell, his beard is so dark.
Oh, it's so, very different colour.
He looks so young.
I first think of him Swap Shop, and he must have been late 20s, early 30s.
But he was on Radio Caroline and all that stuff, wasn't he, since the late 60s. He must have been like 20 in the late 60s. I would guess he is 68 years old.
But I just think Noel Edmonds wouldn't be a good example. I think he has had backward steps and he's gone out of favour and come back and all the rest. So he's had that. Justin Bieber would be the example, wouldn't he? Someone who's not yet known what failure can be. And that's what's driving him slightly mad, I'd imagine.
Yeah, maybe.
Or Michael Jackson never really had a dodgy... Well, he had some court cases, but never had a dodgy... I mean, he never had a time going, oh, is it over now? And am I not going to be a big star? He was like a big star from a child and never had to,
But I still think a lot, if it happens at childhood, I think that screws you up in a different way. I don't think it matters whether... I mean, if you become that successful in childhood, that is, that how do you... Yeah. So if you are a child and you're thinking crazy stuff, and then it gets kicked out of most of us,
yeah,
by reality or just literally by boots.
This is why I feel sorry for footballers, and nobody else feels sorry. I feel so sorry for footballers. All their big money earnings when they're young, all their success, all their things, and then they dropped off a cliff often at 35 or something when it's over. I can't imagine that. I want to reach the peak just before I, 75,
yeah,
when I get the big TV show and lots of money. Because that's when you need the money. You don't need the money when you're 22, do you? Am I being too financial? Sorry.
It's good. It's good to be honest. I mean, I think a lot of people, again, that's something people pretend they're not interested in. But,
yeah,
you know, it's easy to...
Do you have a pension in place and stuff?
I don't have a pension.
No, it's not good, clever, is it? I haven't either. No. It's not. We're going to be on cruise ships, is what I was saying.
I've got life insurance though. So if I die in the next 13 years, or if my wife dies in the next 13 years, we get a big lump sum. So I know we're paying into that. So I'm going to try and die like the day before it expires. Then we'll have won, won't we?
But also, if you're
although really, to really get the full benefits, you die the first week you take it out, because then you've paid £100 and you get £500,000 back.
Shouldn't we be really? What we really want is ideally, for our wives to
ideally
die.
Ideally, my wife should die. Yeah. Ideally, but I still love her enough to want to think I should die.
But
I just
also,
feel it's more likely
but then to also, there's the lovely we're rich widowers, and that's quite sexy. And you've got very little kids, so people go, oh, God, he's such a lovely man, he cares for them, and all the rest. And you've got the lovely memory of your wife. She'll always be there. But... oh, it's a dream.
I do. Well, you know, I wonder if she weighs... She doesn't weigh me up in the same way. I look at her and I see hundreds of thousands of pounds. And I think, you know, well, it would be some comfort for me. I would miss you. There are other equally nice women in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So...
And your kids are really small, aren't
they? I've only got one, yeah. She's 9 months old.
9 months old? Yeah. So you've got to go to playgroups. Oh, he's a dad at the playgroup. They'll fucking love you. I'm excited for you. My daughters are teenagers now, so the next, you know, if my wife dies, it's going to be, they'll be shitty to the new woman, won't they?
Yeah. I pity her.
I missed the window, basically.
I'm just thinking of her. She's thinking, oh, I've got this guy, you know, he's a bit weird, but I've got all this money that comes with him, and now his teenage daughters don't like me. We're awful people. This is a good question. This is a newer emergency question. If you had to go for a week's holiday with one of the puppets from Spitting Image, which... There's a lot of stipulations there, so jump in. Which puppet would you choose? Now, the puppet, you have to remember, the puppet would choose the holiday destination. You would have no choice.
Right.
You would go on holiday with the puppet and the puppeteer and the voiceover artist, but they would be in character the whole time. You wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't be able to address them. And it would be a whole week of the puppet in character for 24 hours a day. But you get a free holiday. It would be free. But which of the puppets would you choose?
That's so difficult.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about.
Have you not been asked this before?
Oh God, it's the same old questions every interview you do. I really, gosh, that's really. I don't know. You obviously think of Thatcher, don't you? When you think of Spitting Image.
Would you like to go on holiday with the pup? It's not even Thatcher. It's the puppet of Thatcher.
No, because it became really scary. Margaret Thatcher's puppet. Scary, it became all starry-eyed. I'm trying to think of who there was. Oh, God.
It's everyone from the late 80s.
I suddenly got this image of Leon Britton's.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, yeah, it's an interesting choice.
That's controversial, isn't it? If he said Thailand, yes, he was. No, No, he was completely innocent.
I just want to point out the puppet definitely never did anything.
Exactly. It was
definitely. But if Leon Britton could have hold of that puppet, that would have been a good way to lure the kids in, wouldn't it? That would have been... to prove his innocence.
Ian McCaskill was
okay,
a puppet,
good,
wasn't
it? Yeah.
Hello. Do you remember? Hello.
Yeah,
yes.
Oh, that would be a good one.
No, that was, yeah. No, that's who I'd like to be. Okay. This is, I'm really crap at this question.
No, that was good.
It's too imaginative for me.
It's good.
So Ian McCaskill, and he would choose somewhere lovely, because he's a weatherman. So
he would.
Obviously, the puppet's not a weatherman, but it would be funny. I can't get enough of a comedy Scottish accent.
Yeah. For a whole week, just that, hello.
Giving me any other options. Hello. I'd obviously prefer to just go where I want to go with my family. When? But if I have to go with Ian, with the puppet, no, I'd go with Ian McCaskill. He's lovely. Okay. Yeah, he's
it's a good answer.
Thank you. Sorry, not more interesting. Who was David Steele was tiny, wasn't he? The tiny ones.
You want a tiny one to take?
Why do I want to? I think it's something sexual about small puppets. Why? Good.
I'm very interested in puppets. Did you ever, when your kids were little, did you ever leave them somewhere and forget that they existed?
Oh, Christ, yes. I've got a really bad... Have you done it yet?
I left her in the car for about 3 minutes, forgetting she was in there, yeah.
Yeah, I did it twice with Martha, my oldest. Left her in the car once. But where did you... I mean, we were going to Camden Market or something, and Martha was really newborn, really new, and I was driving and I was meeting my wife, and... parked the car and walked to the market, walked in, and my wife went, where's Martha? And I was like, it had been about 10 minutes. She was asleep in the car, and I completely forgot. And I had a moment where I thought, my God, I must have dreamt that I was not a father. And I'm like, oh, my God. And went to God. The second time I left her, she was about two or three years old, and I got excited chasing somebody for the police in my car. I saw a bloke kung fu kick a bloke in Palmer's Green, knocked him out. A crowd surrounded the guy who'd been knocked out, and I turned the car around and went, I saw him go across the road, I'm going to find him, and drove back. I don't know why I do this, but I was in my car and I felt brave, and he just kung fu kicked a guy, so I don't think I'd really take him on. So I drove along slowly as he's running down the road. I'm driving along, phoning the police. It was allowed to do hands calls then, and I'm going, I'm following a guy who's just knocked a bloke out in Palmer's Green. I'm on this road, and he's on the... I went, oh, right, okay. And then he went over the North Circular, because the road came to a stop. So I got out the car, locked the car, and followed him on foot with the camera, with the phone, and then said to the woman at the office on 909, I said, I've just had my daughter in the car, she's asleep. So I thought I was like, you know, I was Starsky or something, but with a child in the car.
Not only
you're
taking your child into a dangerous situation, you should take her to the kung fu guy.
Do you know what was stupid? Was I went back to the place, and a policeman was walking out the house of this guy who'd been knocked out. And I said, do you know, I just tried to follow the guy. And he went, yeah. I said, I didn't really want to confront him because I was with my daughter. He just kung fu kicked a guy. There is no way. Children are good to provide you with that excuse to go, didn't want to get involved, I've got kids to look out for. But as though I would have taken him on. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And I've got a kid that I temporarily forgot that I had.
Yes.
Good. I've got some very good questions. Have you ever seen a ghost, Hal? I'm interested to know whether you were the kind of person who would believe in that kind of thing.
I don't believe in it, but I'm scared of it.
And have you seen one, even though you don't believe in it?
This is really pathetic. We had a dog when I was 16. The dog died. And my sister and I were talking in the kitchen, And we're just talking like that, and there was two scratches at the door. And I went over to the door and opened it, and we both went, ran around the house for about 5 minutes, because we just thought the dog was going to be there, and we both heard the scratches. It's pathetic, isn't it? That's all I've...
It was another dog, wasn't it?
Yeah. That had gone that and then run away, yeah. Taking the piss.
Possibly.
Yeah. But no, we used to think there was a presence in our last house, my wife and I.
Yeah.
But we just, it was just the children that we'd forgotten about, probably. But we really did used to, talking about wives dying again. Yeah. My wife constantly likes to scare me. Really likes to, and waits behind door. She knows I get spooked really easily. So, like, I'm in the bathroom sometimes, and she stands right by the door, and I open the bathroom door, and she's there like that. And I go, oh! And I'm so scared of her. This is the reason I don't want her to die first, apart from I want the money. But I feel like she'll take the piss. I feel like if there is such a thing as ghosts, she will knock things around the house. She will appear to me. She'll do all that sort of stuff. But I don't find it comforting, ghosts. But both my parents are dead. Yeah. And if my parents appeared to me, I would go, honestly, fucking leave it. This is not lovely. This scares the crap out of me. Go away. But I love you, but please fuck off.
Yeah.
You know,
it's also just that it would be such an overload. You know, where does it end with ghosts and how far back does it go? And if they're there... You know, is your great-great-great-great-grandfather going to come as well? Say what's going on. You know, there's so many dead people. Does the new dead person knock off the old dead person? That can't be true, because a lot of ghosts are from a long time ago.
So as time goes on, we should be crammed with ghosts. We should be seeing them all the time.
Maybe you have to go and learn to be a ghost. That's why it takes a few hundred years for them to appear.
Yes.
And then if you're really good at it, maybe ghosts can die, and that's why there aren't so many ghosts.
Well, you have seen the film Ghost. He has to learn how to hit people and move stuff and things, doesn't he? He gets taught how to... So but that's obviously irritating. All the answers were in that film.
If they're all doing that, that's very irritating though as well, isn't it? Because then, you know, they're really interfering in... like, you're trying to spend your money from your dead wife.
Yeah.
And she'd be going, oh, spending on that, are you? I don't think so. Or I don't like your new wife.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
That would be horrific.
It would be awful.
I do something in my stand-up show about this, but there is a thing that ghosts never do seem to appear when you're doing something embarrassing. Do they? You've never heard anybody say that. You've never heard anybody say, I was making love and suddenly my dead... parent appeared through, okay, I'm so sorry, I'll come back later, you know. So they never seem to appear, you know. I don't know.
Well, they're very thinking, they think very carefully, they don't want to embarrass you, so they wait. If you're having a shit, they go, see, that's why they're not the same with time traveling historians. They don't care, they just turn up whenever they want. Whatever you're doing, just leave it alone.
Do you watch John Edward on The Living, Crossing
I
Over
have
with
watched
John
it
Edward?
Occasionally, yeah.
John Edward says that, they don't see, maybe they don't care about bodily functions. They don't even see it or anything.
Right.
So they almost can't tell if you're wanking or having a crap or whatever. They're on a different spiritual plane.
Okay.
So it doesn't
That's
matter.
That's a relief.
Because John Edward, do you watch John Edward, anyone? Have you heard of him? American guy. He's really fast with it. I'm sure he's a con man, but he's so good that I really want to believe in him. It's like, what's his name? David Blaine. Mm-hmm. My wife, I used to always go, I can't believe he's done that. It's absolutely impossible. And you want to believe, you know it's rubbish, but, you know.
It'd be nice, that's why these things are so appealing. This is why people can do this, because you want it to be true.
Yeah.
And, you know, but if you can talk to dead people, there must be more interesting things to ask them than things we know already.
Yeah.
And so I'd verify it was them by saying, you know, where is my, you know, where do we keep the key to the whatever?
Yes.
Then if they know that, go, okay, you're definitely them. Which God is correct?
Yeah, exactly. And also, do you know what gets me on those shows? They always have nice things to say. They always go, you know, The Sixth Sense, and she says to... The boy goes, I see grandma or whatever, I see grandma. And she said, she says every day. And what question was it? She said, you asked her a question when you went to her grave. And what question was it? You asked mum, what was it? And she went, I asked if she was proud. And she went, every day.
Yeah.
That's always what ghosts say, don't they? They always come back and go, I'm really proud. And what you've done is fantastic. They never go, I'm ashamed of you, embarrassed. Yeah. Oh, my God, you really let the side down. Oh, Christ, you married that. You know, you never... They never tell you no piss at your crap. Yeah. It's always good news, and that's really makes me suspicious.
Yeah, because I think ghosts, it would free you up to tell the truth, I think, being dead.
Yes, exactly.
There's no more social nicety, so you would really lay into people.
Yeah, no one can hurt you anymore, can they? Yeah.
You wouldn't be bothered about it. You would be on a different plane.
Yeah.
That's what I think. What is the worst emergency you've ever been in?
Do you know what? Is the guy here who was at my show last night in Potter's Bar? Yeah, I have a weird stalker who was at my show in Potter's Bar
last
night.
Is this the emergency?
I tell this in my show. This isn't a setup to a bit of material, is what I want to say. This is a true fact that I tell now as a joke. I told it on Alan Davis's Untitled, and it wasn't a bit of material, and now I've turned it into a bit of material, and I feel guilty, like they think I put a bit of material in. But this is the scariest thing. I was in an armed siege in Stockwell in about 1997, 98... Brian Damage's gig, The Oval.
Yeah.
And we were all sitting in this pub and we were doing a gig in the back room and everybody was wandering through to go and do a gig in the back room. And I was on the second half, so I was hanging about in the main bit of the pub. And I thought, oh, I'll go through now. And we didn't realise that during this time, somebody called the police because they thought someone was in the pub with a gun because two guys were having some feud going on. And the whole pub got surrounded by armed police.
Right.
So I walked into the back room to do this gig. The whole room was empty. A light was shining through the emergency exit. And I just heard, armed police, step into the light. And I promise you, I like came out the door like this. Go, I'm here for the gig. And it really was that moment of these two armed policemen like this. And they're like, so I slightly go, maybe I would have got shot, but I wouldn't because I was being like that. And I do have this thing. I talk about this. I have a thing where I don't get that tense in scary situations. I get the wrong thing. They told me to run behind this building and I've got a funny run. And I went, do I have to run? And they went, yeah, fucking leg it, mate. And I didn't. And I just, as I was running, because I'm a bit out to the side, as I'm running, I just felt policemen behind every barrier were thinking, oh, fucking look at that run. Jesus Christ. You know. So it's pathetic. That still consumed me.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, actually. We ran behind this block of flats and all the other comics who'd been at the gig were there going, hey! Because they'd all been evacuated the same way. And then all these kids started coming off the estate to attack the police because the police were all in the area. This is when it was all winding down.
Yeah.
So we nearly had a riot after that. So after a siege, nearly a riot. These comics were there going, there's so much material in this. I have to do.
And yet it's taken you 15 years, 20
years. Yeah, it's taken me 15
years. And you're the first one to do it.
Exactly. And no one ever... Brian Damage, he's still, and I still say to him, I've finally done a joke about that. But that's sort of the most serious situation I've been in, I think. Yeah.
I once had a heckler who had I later found out had a gun. When I was in, when we're doing Montreal, and me and Stuart were doing one of the little bar gigs. And there was a guy, you know, there was this guy just being an arsehole in the audience. And I hardly did stand up or anything. So I was just really having to go at him, telling him to shut up. And I was being incredibly rude to him. And then he went out, they took him out, but he went outside. And then he was like, obviously part of the local mafia or something. He revealed this gun. So I was telling this guy to fuck off.
Oh,
not
God.
Knowing at any moment. That would have been a very different
Have you been attacked at a stand-up gig?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? The only time I got into one fight after a gig, but there was someone who wasn't in the audience and who just took exception to me and wanted to punch me. But loads of times I've had to leave out the back.
Yeah.
Because you've inflamed people. There was one time I did a routine about the guy who was shot at Stockwell Tube by the police.
Yeah. It's Stockwell again. Stockwell armed police. Yeah. Sorry, nothing.
But then the two people in the audience were furious about it from different angles. One because I was mocking the police, and one because they thought I was mocking the incident. Whereas I probably was mocking the police more than I was mocking the number of bullets it had taken to shoot this unarmed man and everything.
Yeah.
If you're going to shoot someone in the head, you really need 7 bullets to be sure that they've gone down, because with their head, it's like somewhere you don't want to... It's only 6 bullets in the head, so just one more. It was that kind of thing. So it was a very, you know, but it was a satirical routine. Mm. But two guys were so angry that I had to be escorted. But I felt that was quite good that I'd offended both ends of the spectrum with the same routine.
I used to be really brave with it, and now I'm much more... If I see a look in the eye, that I probably saw that guy's eye last night. My stalker, no, Jackie, he's lovely. Liam, isn't it Liam?
Yeah, when you know their names, that's the press.
Liam is his name. If I die tonight, Liam. From Cambridge.
Let's try and get a close-up of him. Also, because the footage will be worth it, you know.
But
it'd be like that picture where Mark Chapman, when he's signing the...
Oh, God, yeah.
Try and get both of them in the same shot.
But I've had that. I once somebody tried to headbutt me, but was so drunk, missed, and hit my shoulder. But I've been attacked probably 5 or 6 times. Right. Been thrown against walls and stuff. And all you do, people get so, especially when they're drunk.
Yeah.
I remember a guy being asleep at a gig, and it was a few months after Soham. Do you remember the terrible killing, Ian Huntley?
Yeah.
And he was asleep at a Christmas gig, and he said, and he woke up, because the crowds are like that at Christmas gigs. He just was like asleep, and he woke up. And I was talking about my kids, and I went, "Have you got kids?" And he went, "You talking about Ian Huntley? You fucking talking about Ian?" And he had to be held back, and I had to leave the stage. And I went, you fucking idiots. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The audience, you know, audiences can get so drunk. That's the time when they're so drunk.
Yeah.
The biggest enemy of comedy in Britain is very drunk people getting the wrong end of the stick. Well, I get so angry with it. It's like, that's why it's lovely to be nice, sober.
Getting offended by a joke that he's obviously thought of himself.
Yeah. He's obviously obsessed with Ian Huntley, yeah.
If anyone's talking about kids, it's obviously exactly. A joke about kids being killed. Which it may have been my gig, fair enough. But yeah. I think I did have a joke about that as well. So, did George Osborne, when you were at school with him, did he ever go to the stationery cupboard and get a lot of pencils out? Just interested to know?
No, okay.
I was just interested to know. So, so you're on tour throughout the sport.
I feel really dodgy about the George Osborne thing because my agent put something in a PR release that I said, take that out. Because he put a thing in going, he tells the story in this show of how George Osborne really upset him. And I said, he didn't. I didn't fall out with George Osborne. And every interview, and he kept it in the PR, and I've had to tell everybody who asked me about it, going, I didn't know him that well. He's going to come and sue me, or tax me, or something. Extra. He's going to find somebody and kill, because I didn't know him that well, so I can't really make up shit about him, can I? Except he wasn't twat. But he is. He's a little dick.
He is quite. I think he could probably have you killed quite easily. And I wouldn't put it past him. Based on no evidence.
Do you know, I was at a gig where I was telling someone about George Osborne, and a guy said, I've got that beat. I was at school with Jihadi John, in his class at school. And I promise you, this is my best comeback ever. I said, couldn't you guess from the name what he was going to do? Because he went to school in West London, didn't he? He was all Maid of Ale.
Yes, well, you know, he might still be alive. We don't know.
Yeah.
At this point, I said, if you're going to name yourself after the Beatles, don't choose John, don't be Jihadi. Yeah. Be Jihadi Paul, and then, you know, you get to be old and have purple hair. Have sex with someone with one leg, which I guess it happens a lot in Syria. So if you've got a problem with that, that's your own issue. It's just a fact. Just a fact. 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 Anyway, do you think that having sex with a robot should, and now I think we might be on the same page as this, should count as cheating on your part? I think you should be allowed to, in a marriage, be able to have sex with a robot, and that's fine.
Yeah,
A very realistic human robot.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, it's not a real person. That's why Westworld. Do you watch Westworld as a child and go, God, if that existed?
If I could only have sex with Yul Brynner, no.
But you could go and have sex with anybody in the Roman world I wanted.
Yeah.
But because it's not
a person, is it?
No.
It's a machine.
And you can tell by the hands.
You're the first person I've met who agrees with me.
Oh, really? Yeah. Was that weird?
Yeah, everyone else thinks it's wrong to have sex with robots. Especially women, I think. Especially my wife. I've been watching... especially Jack Whitehall, for some reason as well. He was on the other day. We were watching Humans, and I really liked the actor, Gemma Chan. Gemma Chan, that's her name. I do a routine about it, so I should know. But my wife, I asked her if I could have sex with a robot if it looked like her. And she said no.
Do you have a thing where you fancy somebody who's famous and then you and your partner have sort of someone you're allowed to sleep with?
Yeah, we did do that, though it hasn't come up
yet. Oh, you've actually slept with them?
No, we have a list of people that we're allowed to. But I kind of keep putting joke people on my list. I think I put... Anne Widdecombe on my list.
Oh, you see, that's silly.
But
you've
I would have
keep
sex
it serious.
With her. No,
really?
Yeah, because she's never had sex with anyone before. So that would be quite a triumph, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
and she is like having sex with the British Institution.
Yeah.
She is
a would, literally.
Yeah. But my wife has Brad Pitt. It's never going to happen. She hasn't got a chance. No, not because she's not very attractive, but she's never going to meet him. But I always had Cate Blanchett.
Right.
And then my sister made a movie with Cate Blanchett where she played a little part. And I was really scared she was going to become best friends with Cate Blanchett. And then there was going to be a dinner party where we might meet. And not that I would ever have a chance with Cate Blanchett, but my wife would tell her or something and go, he thinks he can shag you, you know. So
she would have to say, and you are allowed to if you want to. That is our agreement. And then Cate Blanchett might go, okay.
Yeah, but she wouldn't.
If I'm allowed, I'm going. She might do. You know, we don't know what Cate Blanchett is like. She might
maybe she would be so honoured.
Yeah.
No, but to be so honoured to be the object... I would love it if somebody said... If someone somewhere said said to their wife... If I ever got famous enough where someone said, you're allowed to sleep with Hal Crutton, like, oh, that's always I want to sleep. I'd be so honoured. It's never going to happen.
It would be honourable.
It would be like the Anne Widdecombe thing. It would be a jokey person to fucking sleep with, wouldn't it?
But you still have to do it, though, right? There's no more fun sex than sex that's done for a joke. That's what. Luckily, that's how I managed to have sex before I was 25. I'll ask you another emergency question. Kettle crisps are not as nice as they once were. Have I changed or have they? Don't answer that. If you could travel back in time to compare any food of today with an equivalent or similar food in the past, A, what time would you travel to, and B, what food would you have?
I'm really confused by food because I'm not very into food.
Are you not?
I'm really not. I know what? I'm chubby.
Yes.
And I'm fat, but I do eat crap because I actually do use food to fuel, and I'm a comfort eater. I like chocolate and terrible stuff. I'm not somebody that watches MasterChef or anything. I do a Bake Off Extra Slice.
Yeah, I know.
And I love watching Bake Off, but I only got into it because they asked me to do Extra Slice. I went, I'll watch it, and I bloody love it. I love the competition, but I'm not a baker. And that's the only thing that ever made me bake anything was watching that show. So I'm not an expert on food, but what food? What do you mean?
Well,
what food
I would
has changed?
I would like to go. Well, or just to see what food was like, because I would take kettle crisps back to find out if they were the same 8 years ago or if they're not the
but
same.
There's absolutely no difference in kettle.
Well,
crisps.
Well, there's that's only one way to find out. I think they're quite different now than
what
they
way
were.
Are they different? Though?
They're not. They're not as chunky as they once were. They've been more homogenised. They're not as tasty as they were. But this could be just me. My taste buds may not be as good as they once were. Or I'm now more sophisticated and expect... when I was 20, when I was 35, whatever, when they came out, that was a very sophisticated crisp, the kettle crisp. But now there's Tyrrells, there's you can get kale crisps in... Pret a Manger, that's sophisticated now. So then I go back to kettle, go, this is not... I don't feel... That's the question. It's an existential question at the heart.
But I don't think anybody really thinks they've changed that much apart from you.
Well, I do. Who agrees with me that kettle crisps have changed?
I do.
Yes.
That's a tiny minority
still,
of the audience.
That doesn't mean that we're sharp enough to have spotted the difference in the Matrix, where the rest of you sheeple have just gone along with it, pretending they're the same. It's like wagon wheels. You think wagon wheels are the same size. They're smaller than they used to.
No, that's just because you've got bigger.
Mars bars got bigger and then went smaller.
Well, they went to double size, didn't they?
No, they went. They got lots of chocolate bars in the 90s got big, and then people went, oh, fuck, that's... We're killing loads of people, so then they went small again. So
but you can still get a double Mars bar, can't you?
I don't know if you can anymore. Can you? Anyone?
Can you get you know that thing where you really...
That a thing, Mars bar? Is that an actual bar of Mars bar?
Don't you find I've only ever bought those? They make me think of times of complete despair. Because that's the only time you buy a double and go, I don't care about it. Do you? That's the only time you wear a double and you just have a moment of going, and you really want to... It's so evil, those. The size of that bar you're eating.
Well, they're trying to pretend that you're going to share it with someone, but you're not.
You're not. No.
I'm not going to share with
it. My wife does a horrible thing. She eats half a bar of chocolate and puts it back in the... Like a half a Snickers, puts it in the fridge.
Yeah.
That way that people have control. I find it disgusting. I can't bear it. If it's there, I will eat it.
Yeah, well, my wife can't be by itself. Can't. If she leaves chocolate anywhere I know where it is, I'll eat it.
Yeah.
So I can't have chocolate in the house because at some point I'll be... even when I'm controlling myself, at some point I'll hit a low where I will eat whatever it is, wherever it is. When my child's old enough to have a... Easter egg, it's going to be awful. If she's one of those idiots who saves it up, I mean, I'm hoping she'll be a normal person who just eats it all straight away to make sure no one else gets any of it.
Yeah.
Even though that makes you sick. That is how you eat an Easter egg.
Easter Day is only... I actually don't like it anymore because it's all the memories of feeling sick. Waking up in the morning and just having like two whole Easter eggs and just shoving it down. I can't bear people that have measures over things
just
like that.
Just have a little tiny bit.
Oh, God. And people who talk about food. Oh, they're very succulent. Old people talking about that ham. Nice bit of ham. Did we have a nice bit of ham? God, that makes me sick. Because then you think of the food. Don't be a dead. Just eat it and consume and get it down you. I think
shit it out of you.
Yeah, shit it out of you. And be disgusted at yourself. But do you ever find that when people talk, especially, I know it's not as horrible because I am getting old or getting towards being old, but old people talking about food makes you think of the food in their mouth and it's disgusting. It's ruined Christmas for you, has it, when your gran's going, nice bit of turkey. Did you like the turkey? Oh, please stop, no! Yeah, I know that's horrible, but it's true. You think of it. Sorry.
It's horrible. Do you think having sex with a ghost should be considered cheating with your if you're in a relationship?
Oh, God.
If the ghost has had sex with you without your consent.
Do you know, what's interesting about these questions, it throws me a lot, things that I've never thought about,
yeah,
ever.
Good.
It's really good. Sorry, if the ghost asks your consent, you mean? Before?
No, it doesn't. The ghost just starts having sex.
So it's like the entity.
The ghost starts having sex with you when you're asleep. This is usually what they do. Then you wake up and you're having sex with the ghost.
There are some people who do that, you know. Yeah. Sleep. What's it called? Sleep. Somna.
Sleep. What, get raped by ghosts.
No. People who start having sex with people when they're asleep.
Oh, yeah, there are. That's. I'm not talking about that.
In their sleep.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That's what they say.
Sexsomnia. Yeah. I've got to be honest with you.
Are you just setting this up so later in the dressing room you go, I was asleep, Rich. I was asleep. You can't take me down with this.
I know that I might be prone to this.
You're right.
I thought other people would go, yeah, I've got that. And it's just me.
No one admits.
My wife has had to go, get off me. That in my sleep, I have started going, and she's felt hands around. She was sort of being assaulted in her sleep, but she then woke up and I felt terrible about it because it was awful.
Yeah.
But it is sex. Oh, gosh, that's not criminal, is it? I'm not, but it is quite common. Sex. It's my wife as well. She's in bed.
It's not her fault. Not,
God. I'm getting to the thing. She was in the bed with you. It's her own fault. She was wearing a short nightdress.
It depends
I've
whether
never
in your
shared
sleep,
this
if
with
you're
anyone.
In your sleep when you're having sex with and you're imagining you're having sex with someone else, that is not allowed.
Yeah.
Or is it allowed? I don't know. Because you're not having sex with you, you'll be having sex with your wife as long as she's up for it.
Well, can you imagine if you whispered in your sleep, oh, you feel like my wife? No, you are! No. I don't become French when it becomes sex, when I have sex. But, hello. No, but just, yeah. But no, the ghost thing.
I'm not talking about that. Why have you brought that up? We're talking about having sex with ghosts.
As I said, ghosts scare me too much. I wouldn't be able to perform.
What if it's a really sexy ghost?
It's still from another plane of existence. It's bloody terrifying. Yeah. There's no... come on, who would really be able to go, oh, brilliant, I'm up for this? Your whole mindset would be blown by the ghost existing and being there. And you think, well, who else can join in on this if one ghost can get, you know...
All of them come down.
And then all of them gather around and watch, or it becomes like a gangbang. Can you be gangbanged as a man? I don't...
They can actually enter you in every orifice. Yes, they actually can. Literally, completely. But they can't.
Imagine someone comes in and can't see the ghosts, and you're naked going, you know. horrible.
And then they join in.
Yes.
It's become quite an exciting, sexy. Richard Dawkins claims to have seen dogs doing a 69. This is Tim Turner's question. What's the worst lie you've ever told to impress people?
God.
And I like that question because it sort of implies Richard Dawkins was just sort of going, people won't be impressed by me writing The Selfish Gene, but now I've told them about these dogs I didn't see.
Have you read Richard Dawkins'
stuff?
I do.
I'm a big fan of his anything that's longer than a tweet. I'm a big fan of his books. I wish he would just stick to writing them.
I haven't read his books. They're on the bookshelf. My wife actually did lose... She was fairly religious.
Right.
Well, she was fairly religious. Considering her background, Presbyterian Northern Ireland, she's super duper liberal for being a bit Church of England when I met her. But she lost it completely reading Dawkins. So, but I've never... Yeah, I'm terrible. What's the
worst lie you've told to him? Do you lie? I mean, I don't really lie.
Lie because I'm really scared of if I lie, then I'm going to get caught out by the lie and you just feel ridiculous. I don't know. I lie pretending to know people that I don't know. When people come up in Edinburgh, especially as a comic, because you've been around a lot and you work with a lot of people who remember you because they've seen you on stage for 20 minutes or an hour and you forget who they are. So I spend a lot of time lying to pretending I know people I don't know. Hi, how are you? God, how are you? How's it going? And you're thinking, oh shit, do I like you? Did we get on well last? You know, I don't know anything about it. So,
that's a merry ballet you have to go through, isn't it? When you're trying to work out how you know them without giving away. It's like when you meet someone, you go, oh, it's nice to meet you. And they go, yes, I saw you last time. You have to then go, yeah, I mean, to see you again, you know, like...
Yes, yeah.
It
does get to me that they should be more considerate for the fact that we are self-obsessed performers. We're not going to remember people who are talking to us for five
don't
minutes.
Don't you think that in general about everyone? I mean, I wouldn't be offended if someone didn't recognise me. But some people some people get very offended if you don't know who they are or if you don't.
No, work. They don't.
They do.
They?
But some people are offended by the idea. Going, oh, you know, of course you should know.
No, I think people think because you get this at corporate dues when you do when somebody introduces you and they're trying to big you up because the corporate dues can be dodgy gigs because you're going on and doing things and we do them for money, we sell our souls, and you're introduced going and they say things like you'll know him from Have I Got News for You or Live at the Apollo and I walk on my a lot of the room are going I don't know who the fuck he is, who does he think he is, so I have to do that stuff. I'm saying, but I think most people I can't think of anyone. I mean, what if you were if you were David Cameron? I mean, I'm not saying, oh, what a wonderful example, but if somebody didn't know him, you would be a bit surprised if you were Prime Minister and someone went, I don't know who you are. You know, but I don't think, hardly, you've got to be massive.
I think
Elton John,
do.
Maybe.
But you should just say, hello, I'm Richard, we met before. Well, you know, I think, like, reintroduce yourself. That should be the
yeah, but what examples have you got of people actually being offended by people not recognising them?
I think you are. I can't think of
Have you got
like
a story
examples.
About Stuart? Is
that... I haven't, but, I think there are definitely times. I think it was maybe when people are looking for you to be up yourself, so they think, oh, you know, he doesn't remember me and I've met him before.
Yeah.
So that, I think people sometimes... But sometimes people... Well, sometimes I meet people I know quite well and I can't quite remember their name or...
Yeah.
You know, but lots of people I can't place... Well, it's like we're mentioning this backstage. You know, if someone just habitually doesn't remember.
Oh yes, because this is. I was inspired and loved Eddie Izzard when I started getting into stand up. I used to watch his videos and everything, and I met him four times, and he never knows who I am. And I spend long times talking to him every time, going, "Oh, Eddie, and he just must just shut off, going, "It's this nutter again." Because every time I meet him, he goes, "And I'm going, it's Hal, nice to meet you," and just you know, and it does upset you because you are going, "But I'm your number one fan. You don't understand. I'm going to have to make you have a car accident and keep you in a log cabin." Then you'll know me, Eddie. I don't like this new bit of material, Eddie. Give me another. You can imagine it. Hobble him or whatever.
What if you... There's this guy going to hobble you and you're going to hobble Eddie. It could be like an awful...
Yes. A little,
circle.
Yeah. A stalking triangle.
A human centipede.
Brilliant. Yeah. Oh, God. Sorry, there was... There was part of me going, would I do a human centipede with Eddie Izzard? I do respect him enough that I would, probably.
I don't think it's really about respect that so much. That's why people are doing it. I could never bear to watch those films. It must be. It's not a centipede, is it? Or is it human?
It is human centipede, isn't it?
Okay, it is. Good. Well, I'd like to talk to you two for you a lot longer. There isn't much. You were born in Ealing, where I did my first job of working. Well, my first job once I left university, which was writing the phone directory for West London.
Oh,
yeah.
What? So you have to write? Well, you have to research it and write it all.
You have to research it very carefully. No, you're allowed to just make it up.
No,
it's okay. Yeah, just go. Come up with a good name.
Do you just have loads of you doing it? Just doing. Yeah. I'm doing the A's, I'm doing the B's.
I was very good at it. Basically, information would come in. To begin with, I was only worked there for 3 weeks, but to begin with, it came in on cards, and then the system got computerised, which was, you know, that's
how old I am. But haven't you been to Cambridge or something?
I went to Oxford University.
Oxford?
But then I was trying to become a comedian, so I had temp jobs. I temped in BT. Ever passed that in the shopping centre? Any happy memories of Ealing? Just you don't still live there, do you?
No, I did things that didn't go that well, so I couldn't stay. Oh. Ealing's lovely now, isn't it? Yeah, my sister's there. Both my sisters are round there, but I'm in Enfield because times have been hard. Not that bad. Nice Enfield. Now, if you know Enfield, the right side of the A10. Because there's dodgy Enfield, the poltergeisty dodgy bit, which is dangerous, where the poltergeist was, if you know about Enfield poltergeist. That's on the bad side, in the rough area, and I'm in the nice bit. But, yes, Ealing's... Oh God, it's lovely. It's gorgeous there, isn't it? I didn't realise how nice it was. When I was there, but, you know... And I was at a posh school where they thought we were rough. As the Pauls are going, Ealing boys, you're a bit fucking rough. You're not a Western John's Wood and we're Richmond and all this stuff. And now it's ridiculous. But then, you know, we used to, that thing about my school, we used to play Eton at sport and go, fucking Eton, I think they're so fucking posh. And, you know, and we were so posh as well. We just, you know, you do that level. There are levels.
There are levels.
You're always looking for somebody to be, you know, posher than you. And more.
Yeah, who do you think the people in Eton are looking to?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no one for
them.
They'd
be going to, well, they're probably the home educated in a castle people. Only the royals. And actually, the royals are there scumming it at Eton, aren't they now?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, let's leave it talking about posh public schools. That is a lovely way to end. But ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause to Hal Crandon. Thank you. We'll be back after the interval next week. You've been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Hal Crandon. The music is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, especially Orange Mark, for putting this up. And thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. It is produced by Dave Cribb. It's a Sky Potato, it's a Fuzz, and it's a Go Faster Stripe production. All three together. It's amazing we get on so well. We haven't fallen out yet. Thanks for listening. Goodbye. Thanks very much for listening to my podcast. If you have enjoyed it, why not come and see me on tour? I'm touring my show Happy Now from February through to June 2016. Go to richardherring.com/gigs or richardherring.com/happy_now/tour and you can get all the dates for that. I'm almost certainly coming somewhere near you. It'd be lovely to see you at a gig and you could see me doing proper comedy rather than this made-up rubbish. I'm good. I'm genuinely good at comedy, at stand-up and stuff. Honestly, come and see. If you don't like it, I'll give you £2 back at the end. Okay, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.